May it please the court. My name is Michael Garner. I'm counsel for the appellant Samsung Dealers in this case on an appeal from the Northern District of Illinois' grant of summary judgment to Volvo, successor to Samsung, and against the dealer's claims for wrongful termination of their dealer agreement. In preface, I'd like to ask the court to keep in mind three points this morning. First, apart from any contract issues, five of these dealers are protected against termination without cause under statutes of their states of residence that protect dealers in heavy equipment. And those are the statutes of Texas, Montana, and Maine. Secondly, to the extent that the written dealer agreements are held to be in effect here, they were modified by the uncontested statements of Samsung that the 60-day notice without cause provision would only be exercised if there was a reason to terminate the dealers and that they would be continued as dealers so long as they performed. And the dealer agreements themselves contain an exception to the no oral modifications clause that allows that oral modification because it says, except for changes by the company permitted under this agreement, no amendment or modification shall be valid unless executed in writing by both parties. And it is uncontested that the company made a change under the agreement.
But, Mr. Garner, how do we deal with this? Each of the contracts was for a limited term. And several, of course, had expired by their own terms at the time that Volvo terminated the franchises. And if we were to adopt your reasoning, wouldn't we be treating these contracts as having indefinite terms? Then we would be rewriting the contracts to exclude not only the termination clause and the integration clause, But also the length of time for the contract.
Okay, Your Honor, I'll do my best to answer those questions. First of all, absolutely, we agree that these six of these agreements ended by their terms prior to Volvo's exercise of what it calls its termination. Now, the issue then becomes what happened at the expiration of those agreements. If we look at the terms of those agreements, what we find is a provision, 23.1, that says nothing herein shall be deemed to create any express or implied obligations on either party to renew or extend this agreement. We go on and see in 23.7 that it says the consummation of any transaction after expiration doesn't revive the agreement. So the terms of Samsung's own agreement says on expiration those written terms expire. Now, nobody disputes that the parties continued to have transactions after that. The question is under what terms? There is no dispute on this record that Samsung made continual assurances to these dealers that so long as they kept the line, so long as they did the job, they would keep the line.
Then, I know you argue that that's fundamental. You know, that if the dealers are performing, they will not be terminated. But if it's so fundamental, why isn't it in the contract? The contract seems to allow termination without cause. It's a red flag, and it's not ambiguous. And it's the language you signed, and that's my problem with it.
I understand, and the dealers asked about the termination without cause language, and they were told, and Mr. Brewer, who is a former employee of Samsung, has testified that the meaning of that provision is that it was a discretionary provision that would only be used if a dealer had a deficiency that was so grievous that it could not be cured, and they would therefore terminate under that provision. It is a modification that is effective under the provision permitting modification under paragraph 30, or we can look at it as a gloss on the meaning of the word may in that provision. If we look at that provision for termination without cause, it says this agreement may be terminated. And that's the key to discretion here, because if we look down at section 22.4 and section 22.5, which enumerate reasons for cause, they do not use the term may. They use the term shall. This agreement shall terminate immediately at the sole option of the company. Up in 22.3, this agreement may be terminated. What is the scope of the discretion that can be exercised under may? What Mr. Brewer, Samsung's employee, testified was that that would only be used if there was a grievous deficiency by the dealer that Samsung viewed could not be cured, and that it would not be used to terminate without any reason or without cause. So it is both a gloss on may.
You're asking us to read something into the contract because of an oral statement.
No, Your Honor.
Into the written contract.
No, Your Honor. We're asking.
Expand the contract.
We're not asking you to expand the contract. We're asking. We're contending that the contract was modified by the parties, by not just the parties, but Samsung's uncontested statements as to what this meant, and by the parties' conduct, inasmuch as they continued to deal after the expiration of those agreements, so that we have a modification there.
Yeah, I have the same problem that Judge Rovner has with your position, and I'm curious, why weren't these understandings and oral guarantees reduced to writing in an updated agreement?
This is a form contract, Your Honor. It was.
That's not an answer, though. Sure, it's a form contract. It's used with all their dealers.
I think there are two responses. Number one, it's a form contract. Number two, the dealers did raise that question, and they were given these oral assurances that they would not be terminated unless there was cause. And they had an ongoing relationship. I think
so
if we look
they,
at
they accepted that that response and did not get it reduced to writing.
That's correct. But let's if we look at the other side of it, looking at the history of these dealers from 1992 forward, we have numerous instances in which these written contracts expired by their terms, and the parties continued to do business with one another. So. By Samsung's own conduct, the writing was not the document that necessarily controlled the relationship. It was the conduct between the parties and the statements that they made to one another. And had the writing been that important, then the question to Samsung is, why wasn't it continually keeping these writings in force, and why is it now in the position of coming before this court and saying, we have the right to use a termination clause that we didn't even trouble to bring into effect or to keep in effect.
Well, they could bring it into effect at any time, couldn't they? Either party? 60 days and...
Not after the agreement has expired. And I'm confining that piece of the argument to the six dealers
right.
whose agreements had expired at this time. If we look at the...
Well, then your theory is that they could never terminate them except for cause.
Except for cause. That's
it was
exactly
a lifetime
right.
contract, like federal judges.
Wasn't a lifetime contract.
Well,
it was a contract that lasted as long as they performed.
Performed, sure.
And that's absolutely consistent with the law under the five states, and I don't think this is contested here. I'm sorry, with respect to the five dealers under three states, where those states have statutes applicable to these types of dealers that prevent termination without cause.
But wouldn't that mean that a party could never write an effective termination without cause provision?
No, Your Honor. parties write effective termination without cause provisions all the time, and if they live according to the words that they've written, they don't make statements that contradict those provisions. What we have here is a record that shows, without dispute, from Samsung's side, that that provision was not going to be used unless there was cause. And we have a written agreement that says, as we quoted earlier, that the company can make that type of a change. So Samsung is the party that started this ball rolling, as it were, by saying we're not going to use this. And Samsung comes in, went into the court below and comes before this court not having contradicted what Mr. Brewer said about termination without cause.
Let me take you somewhere else.
What's your best case?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
What's your best case supporting that theory that you're espousing?
That the agreement was...
That you have this lifetime agreement.
Okay, Your Honor, I don't have a case on the tip of my tongue right now.
Well, you have it in your briefcase or something?
Refer to the
there case. Is no case, is there?
I believe there is, Your Honor. I'd request...
And where is it? I would think you'd have it here if you have some case law to support your theory.
Well, I apologize, Your Honor. I can't cite it right now.
You know, you complained about not being able to take adequate discovery. Did the district court not allow adequate discovery? And, you know, if so, how were you limited?
The district court did not allow discovery.
Period.
I want to still get back to the ambiguity because, you know, are you saying that that language, the May language and the shall language that you mentioned earlier, is that what is ambiguous? Because the termination provision is pretty clear, at least from my reading of it.
We're not saying that that's ambiguous language.
So what is the ambiguous language?
We're not saying that there is an ambiguity. We're saying two things. Number one, that there was a modification of that provision that was executed by words and conduct that said that the provision for termination without cause would not be exercised. Item number two, we're not saying that this is ambiguous and that the court should look at parole evidence. What we're saying is that we are illuminating the existing language, which can be illuminated by course of dealing and explained by course of dealing or by the parties. Conduct or words, and it's well established that the party's conduct can be one of the best indications of what they meant. I am running into my rebuttal time, and I just want to wrap up at this juncture by pointing again to the statutes of Texas, Montana, and Maine that provide for protection of such dealers against termination without cause, wholly apart from what the contract says. So if we had an airtight contract that said these dealers can be terminated without cause, those statutes would override those contractual provisions and protect them from termination without cause. And those dealers are Cisco, ConEquip, and ConEquipment in Texas, PMC in Montana, and FMS in Maine. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, I am Michael J. Lockerbie with the law firm of Hunton & Williams in Richmond, Virginia, representing the appellee, Volvo Construction Equipment North America, Inc. And as set forth in Volvo's brief, there are seven legal issues raised by the smorgasbord of claims that the dealers brought before the district court, but they really all boil down to one fundamental question of law, and that is, can corporations that enter into commercial relationships rely upon the plain language of integrated written contracts to govern their relationship and to govern their rights and obligations? Or were the Samsung dealers in this case entitled to have the district court, in effect, act as their guardian ad litem, renegotiating their contract after the fact to delete terms that were clearly in the contract and also to add terms that were never there in the first place. We would respectfully submit that on the record of this case, the district court was correct in dismissing the Samsung dealer's complaint in its entirety, and Volvo is entitled to judgment as a matter of law. Now, in terms of the record...
Excuse me for a moment. I have a rather discreet question that I would just like to have answered. You argued that you... Samsung argued that you waived your argument about the applicability of the main statute. Are they correct?
No, Your Honor, they're not correct.
Where did you make the argument?
In the reply memorandum in support of Volvo's motion for summary judgment. But since Your Honor asked about the record below, there's been the statement before this court that the district court didn't allow any discovery. And in fairness to Mr. Garner, he was not, he did not participate in this case previously. He was not here. The court doesn't have to take my word for it, just as the court doesn't need to take the dealer's word as to what the terms of the contracts were. There was a transcript of the status conference before Judge Koukouras on April 25th, 2001. And in fact, the district court had previously allowed 60 days for the completion of written discovery and had set a status conference upon the completion of that discovery. When the parties showed up on April 25th, Volvo had in fact made voluminous documents available for review by the Samsung dealers. As the transcript shows, there were photographs in the courtroom. There were literally hundreds of boxes of documents that had been shipped from Europe, shipped from off-site storage facilities, and yet the Samsung dealers' counsel did not ever avail themselves of the opportunity to review those
documents.
Is this
transcript part of the court record, please?
Pardon me?
Is this transcript that you're holding in your hand and referring to part of this court record?
Your Honor, I cannot, standing here, provide a citation to a page number on the record, but this was transcribed by
and
Judge.
And is it in the court record in this case?
It should be, Your Honor. It should be, Your Honor. At that point, Judge Koukouras set a briefing schedule for the summary judgment motions. Now, by ordering the briefing of the summary judgment motions before the parties incurred the expense of several dozen depositions, the district court did not deprive the Samsung dealers of their day in court or the opportunity to present evidence. To the contrary, they submitted voluminous affidavits, which the court has seen, about the oral promises that had allegedly been made. And in fact, it was the plaintiff's lawyer's dream, and that these affidavits were, in the words of the Samsung dealers' counsel, not the witnesses themselves. The witnesses were not subject to cross-examination by Volvo's counsel. And under Rule 56, the district court considered these affidavits in the light most favorable to the Samsung dealers. And yet, even under the generous standard under Rule 56, any disputes as to material facts, who said what to whom, were not outcome determinative. And that is why the court granted summary judgment, and that is why we would submit that the court's grant of summary judgment was proper. Now, this is supposed to be a breach of contract case, and yet it's telling that the Samsung dealer agreements themselves were not included in the appellant's appendix. We did submit them to the court, and as they show, there were in fact negotiated changes to a number of the contractual provisions. However, there were no negotiated changes to the critical provisions at issue here, including the provisions that said the contract could be terminated without cause, there was no right of renewal, the merger and integration clause, the anti-waiver clause, the provision allowing the discontinuation of products at any time, disclaimers of consequential damages, etc. Mr. Garner is correct that some of the written contracts had expired at the time that termination notices were sent. However, the district court was correct in determining as a matter of law that either the terms of the expired agreements continue to govern, and that's clearly the case under Illinois law, or alternatively, the relationship became one terminable at will. Either way, Volvo was entitled to terminate. Because the written contracts are so clear, they've asked the Samsung dealers have asked this court to admit parole evidence in course of dealing. However, this court's precedents, and we cited Brooklyn Bagel Boys, among other cases, that unless the court finds that there's some ambiguity or there's some critical terms missing, extrinsic evidence is not admissible. And the same is true with respect to parole evidence. Indeed, in another case before this court 8 years ago, the Hardee's case cited in our brief, Mr. Garner was before a different panel of this same court making the very same argument on behalf of a franchisee. And the district court in that case had said, and I'm quoting now, "It is simply unreasonable to continue to rely on representations after stating in writing that you are not so relying." And that's precisely what happened here. The Samsung dealers stated in writing in their contracts that there were no oral representations, just as this court did in the Hardee's case. We would submit that the dismissal in this case ought to be affirmed as well. Similarly, in terms of course of dealing, this court's precedents are clear that course of dealing evidence cannot be used to override the express terms of a written contract. In the VM Corporation case, for example, that we cited, this court not only refused to admit evidence of course of dealing, but also enforced a no liability for termination provision, much like the disclaimer of consequential damages at issue in this case. Now, the dealers have argued that somehow, because this clause was never invoked before, the right to enforce it was waived. Well, of course, if that were the law, then a clause like this could never be enforceable, because unless the manufacturer enforced it right away, it would be held to have waived it. Moreover, the contract has the anti-waiver provision, and indeed, Illinois courts routinely enforce anti-waiver provisions, as in the McDonald's v. CB Management case that we cited in our brief.
Let me take you to something else, because you seemed to concede that the Texas statute was amended to include construction equipment in 99.
That's precisely the case, Your Honor, and that is why...
Would that change apply to the contract?
No, it would not,
yes.
Because the Texas legislature, of course, even if the legislature could constitutionally apply that amendment retroactively, in fact, when the Texas legislature amended the statute in 1999, it said that it applied only to contracts entered into after the effective date of that statute, which was September 1999. And that language is telling, Your Honor, because there had been prior amendments to the same statute. And in those prior amendments, the Texas legislature had said these amendments apply to contracts entered into or renewed after the effective date. The legislature didn't say that. And in fact, in this case, the contract had been terminated before the amendment took effect. But Your Honor's question raises the issue of whether there is some statute out there in some state that somehow trumps the plain language of these contracts. And clearly there is not. In the case of the Illinois statute, the Illinois Franchise Disclosure Act, it's very clear that the statute applies only to someone who operates a franchise business located in this state. The statute does not apply extraterritorially. It also says that it applies only to fraud at the time the franchise was offered or sold. There's no allegation of that. Similarly, it applies only to termination of a franchise before the expiration of its term, and as Mr. Garner told the court, six out of the eight dealers' contracts had, in fact, expired before they were sent notice of termination.
You know, you've argued that the IFDA doesn't apply because it was amended to exclude construction equipment, and you seem to be arguing that the proper time to apply the law would be at the time the lawsuit is filed, right?
That's what we argued, yes, Your Honor.
Wouldn't the parties expect it to be the law at the time they signed the contract?
Well, Your Honor, for one thing, it's not clear that the Illinois statute included construction equipment at the time the parties signed the contract. Indeed, it was in response to a court decision that the Illinois legislature amended the statute, but more importantly, the statute, as it's always been in effect, has never applied outside Illinois. And also, in fact, we would submit that Volvo had good cause for termination as a matter of law, and this is an argument that cuts across all these various state statutes that they say apply. For one thing, there is, in the case of the Illinois statute, the statute says that good cause includes but is not limited to performance deficiencies on the part of the dealer. And in case after case decided by other courts, and we cite them in our brief, the federal courts have held that good cause for termination includes the manufacturer's legitimate business interests. And indeed, the courts have so held even when there's a statute that says that good cause is limited to dealer malfeasance. The Friedman Truck Center case out of the federal court in New Jersey.
I'm not sure you're answering my question. I mean, I'm very interested in what you're saying, but I'm not sure you're answering the question that I asked.
Well, okay, forgive me then, Your Honor. At the time the parties entered into the contract, it was not clear that the Illinois statute applied to construction equipment, and the statute was subsequently amended.
So why not at the time it's breached? I mean, why at the time the lawsuit is filed is what I'm trying to get to. Why should that be?
Under the cases we cited to the district court, it's clear that what the legislature giveth, the legislature can taketh away, and there is no property right in having the protections of these statutes. And therefore, the legislature was free to change the elements of the cause of action. But, Your Honor, notwithstanding that, even if there were no exemption for construction equipment dealerships in the statute, the dealers would still have no claim for violation of the Illinois statute because the Illinois statute doesn't apply extraterritorially, and Volvo had a good cause for termination.
I don't think that, I may not have been clear. My question really is this. When is the proper time to apply the law? At the time the contract formed, at the time the contract breached? You argue that it's at the time a lawsuit is filed. And what I'm trying to figure out is, well, that option makes the least sense to me, personally.
With all due respect, Your Honor, in the cases we cited to the district court, that would be the law. But even if there were some contrary rule, in this case it wouldn't matter for the reasons I had stated. I see my time's about to expire, and in closing would just say that the other states...
You've got about 1 minute.
The other state statutes clearly do not apply as well. There is no material issue of fact. There's a question of statutory construction before the court. The only dispute is between the plaintiff's characterization of the equipment. They say that in Texas, these are not agricultural machines, yet they say in Montana they are. Even if these statutes applied, Volvo had good cause, and we would respectfully request that the district court's dismissal be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. 1 minute, sir.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'll be very brief. On the discovery flap that we have here, I'm informed by my co-counsel that Volvo gathered the documents and made an exhibit to the district court, but then said, here's what we've gathered, but we do not want the expense of exchanging them. And we argued against that, but the documents were never actually produced and made available.
Were they in the courtroom, as he said?
They were not in the courtroom, no, Your Honor.
Where were they? In at
they
their
were
office?
At their location.
Did you send anybody out there to see them?
No, we did not. They said that they didn't want the expense of actually making the production.
did they say make copies or production?
I am told of exchanging the documents. That's what they didn't want to do. Volvo has conceded that six of these contracts expired, and yet they say they want to stand on the written agreement. They can't have it both ways. I see that my time
is up.
You
can continue what you're saying.
I just have a couple of more points.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. They have not disputed the written term in paragraph 30 of the agreement that says that the contract may be modified if it is a modification that they have made and that's permitted by them. So they have the option to modify, and they did do that. They haven't contested any of our uncontested showing of the oral statements that were made here. And then finally, Judge Coffey, you asked for citations earlier. I have Mayer and Associates against Quality Cabinets, 640 Northeast 2nd, 1000.
640 Northeast 2nd.
1000.
Yes.
Which stands for the proposition that a contract can be modified if the party who did not propose the changes is shown to acquiesce in it through a course of conduct consistent with the acceptance. That's on pages 37 and 38 of our opening brief. And unless the panel has further questions, I'll respectfully request that the judgment of the district court be reversed. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel. We will proceed to case number two.